Hello, you guys. Welcome back to another episode. No, I'm not going to go into detail about delay mints or anything. I made a full episode about that. It's like 12 minutes long. Just posted it 15-ish minutes ago. So go check that out if you are wondering about anything. This episode, we are actually not going to go ghost hunting at the Cecil Hotel. We are definitely not going to say she was possessed or she was playing a paranormal game in elevator. We are going to separate the fact versus fiction of Alisa Lam. Before we get straight into this episode, no, this is not going to be a viewer's discretion advice, so anyone can, go into it and listen to it or not. But on top of that, we have a Facebook page. Let's just start out with that. You know, we post our updates there, whether it's episode updates or series updates or, anything like that. Go check that Facebook page out, and we are listed on it as After Dark Coast to Coast. But the thing that I was going to say before that is, have you been notified about our episodes? Are you even following us? Because if you haven't, go do so right now. I'm not lying. I don't know how many times, me saying this is important, because it is. You go like our podcast, you follow our podcast, be notified. If you haven't started following our podcast, follow it, and then it'll prompt you, definitely on Spotify, that you want to follow our podcast, and you want to be notified of our podcast whenever new episodes come out. So go do that right now before continuing. And if you already have, let's just jump into this episode. Now, why I picked such a popular case, which I normally don't do, like this whole series is based off, actually this whole podcast, I should say, not this whole series, but this whole podcast is based off of very, very little known cases around the world. So why did I pick Alisa Lam from Cecil Hotel? That actually has a 4-part documentary that hasn't came out yet on Netflix. And on top of that, Ghost Adventures. Why pick such a popular case? Well, this is the Postmortem Files. This is the episode, or this is a series, I should say, that we go into the life of a person, and we look at how they died, what they died from, and all of that. Now, that's why we did it. We have to distinguish now how she died, because she wasn't possessed. I'm telling you that right now. As much as I like to believe in the supernatural and demonic possession and all of that other stuff, in this case, like everybody thinks there is with this case and surrounding this case, she wasn't possessed. She wasn't playing some paranormal game called the elevator game. By the way, I have tried that. It does not work, but she wasn't doing any of that. And we need to separate that from the whole paranormal side. We need to understand that there was something wrong with her, whether mentally or she had something inside of her. So when she was found, February 19th of 2013. She was in downtown Los Angeles, for whatever reason, and she was at the time studying at the University of British Columbia, where she was born. Yes, she does have her Cantonese name, but she was born in Vancouver. This happened when she was found, or before I should say. People were complaining about, how the water was off, how the pressure was off of the system, and all these general water problems, you know? And when they checked out their water tanks on top of the building, they found her. She was reported missing, though, at the beginning of February. Let's just throw that out there. And her case had actually grown to interest 5 days prior to the discovery of her body, when the LA Police Department released a video the last time she was known to be seen on the day of her disappearance by the widely famous, now I guess, elevator security camera footage. When she was in the elevator, when she appeared, you know, in some people's eyes to be possessed, or in some people's eyes she appeared to be paranoid and panicky and thinking that something was following her, someone was following her. Like you said, you know, those are the common things that makes up this case. But she had medication as well. And it had also been argued that the elevator footage was altered prior to the release. I don't know how much of that is actually true. That's the first time I've actually heard that. But who knows? Anything could be altered. The circumstances of Lam's death, once she was found, also raised questions, especially in light of the hotel's history in relation to other notable deaths and murders. If you don't know, let's go on to the paranormal side. You know, we're not going to brush up on ghost adventures or anything, but Cecil Hotel is a widely known haunted place in America. Due to these deaths and these murders, I should say, a lot of these deaths though were suicides, and a lot of these deaths were murders. You know, which probably did raise paranormal questions of the video. Her body was naked, with most of her clothes and personal effects floating in the water near her. It took the LA County Coroner's Office 4 months after repeated delays to release the autopsy report. This autopsy report reported that there was no evidence of physical trauma, and states that the death was accidental. Guests at the Cecil sued the hotel over the incident, and Lam's parents filed a separate suit later that year. The latter was dismissed in 2015. Some of the early internet interest noted that there was considered unusual similarities between her death and the 2002 horror film of Dark Water. You know, this once again also made some other films like Ghost Adventures and the Netflix docuseries. Let's go into more of the background of Lam and why this is important, and is she diagnosed with anything? Like I said, she has taken meds prior to her death. Her parents, including, I don't think it was her, but at least her parents, were immigrants of Hong Kong. She was also the student, like I said, at the University of British Columbia, although she was not registered at the beginning of 2013. From her trip to California, Lam traveled alone on Amtrak and intercity buses. She visited the San Diego Zoo and posted photos taken there on social media. On January 26, she arrived in LA. After 2 days, she checked into the Cecil Hotel near downtown Skids Row, and Lam was initially assigned to share room, or assigned a share room, I should say, on the hotel's fifth floor. However, her roommates complained about what the hotel's lawyer would later describe as certain odd behavior, and Lam was moved to a room of her own after 2 days. We're not going to go into the hotel history, but let's just recap really fast on the things that just stand out, you know, that people may not have known. The first question that was raised in my mind was, it seemed like she wasn't attending the college at that point. I'm not saying she was or this was just some random trip, but from what I was reading, it seemed like she was not registered at the beginning of 2013 at University of British Columbia. She was traveling with her roommates, but quote unquote, certain behavior was happening long. We can't distinguish that behavior, obviously. We would only jump into a rabbit hole. We would go down a long conspiracy road of why she was acting odd and what the behavior was, but she was moved to a room of her own after 2 days. I'm going to throw this out here, though, about the hotel. There has been several big things, like serial killers staying at the Cecil Hotel, suicides, rapes, and all the other stuff. But let's get back into Lam. Lam had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder and depression. She had been prescribed 4 medications, which was Wellbutrin, Lamisetol, I think, and Seroquel and Effexor, and these were to treat her disorders. According to her family, who supposedly kept her history of mental illness a secret, she had no history of suicidal ideations or attempts, although one report claimed that she had previously gone missing for a brief period. And that's common with, you know, I don't know necessarily about bipolar, but it can happen a lot with people with depression. They just want to get away, they run away and all that. In mid-2010, she began a blog named Other Fields on Blogspot. And if you don't know what Blogspot is, that is technically where our blog is held on and is hosted by Google. Over the next 2 years, she posted pictures of models in fashionable clothing and accounts of her life, particularly her struggle with mental illness. In a January 2012 blog post, Lam lamented that a relapse at the start of the current school term had forced her to drop several classes, leaving her feeling so utterly directionless and lost. She titled her post as, quote unquote, "You're always haunted by the idea of wasting your life," after a quotation from novelist Chuck Palahniuk. I know I pronounced his last name, but it's not important. She used that quote as epigram for her blog. Lam worried that her transcript would look suspicious with so many withdrawals, and it would result in her being unable to continue her studies and attend graduate school. After little over 2 years, Lam had started blogging. She announced she would be abandoning her blog for another thing she had started on Twitter, or not Twitter, but Tumblr, I mean, called Navu. I think that's how you pronounce it. Its content mostly consisted of, once again, fashion photos, quotes, and a few posts in Lam's own words. The same author's quotation was used in the epigraph. So, in short, it seems like she was a really good student. You know, despite her mental illness, what her mental illness brought, though, may seem to be a counter of a relapse. Maybe, you know, she kept certain things from her family. Let's look on this as a logical side. You know, she could have been cutting. She could have been doing things within her bipolar disorder. I don't know if she did drugs, but it's possible that she did drugs. And that was her relapse to cope with her mental illness. Whether it was crushing pills of her prescription to make her feel okay or better, or in LA, there's always drugs on the street, so maybe she relapsed with drugs. Don't know, and I guess we'll find that out in the autopsy as well. When she disappeared, Long contacted her parents in British Columbia every day while traveling. This seems to be a lot with a lot of people that disappear. They have something that they consistently do that everyone knows of. And when they stop doing it for a while, you know, in this case, contacting family member or friend, it's odd, it's off, it feels eerie, it feels odd, it feels everything that we just take a part of, I guess. And I guess this is what prompted her parents to call the LA Police Department on February 1st. She was scheduled to check out of the Cecil Hotel and leave for Santa Cruz. Her family also flew to LA to help with the search, which makes sense. You know, you care so much about your child cares so much about you, but ultimately, it's just something that you would do for your child, no matter where you are. Hotel staff who saw Lam that day said she was alone. Outside the hotel, Katie Ofrin, who was a manager at a nearby bookstore, was the only person who recalled seeing her that day. She said that she was outgoing, very lively, very friendly, while getting gifts to take home to her family. She was talking about what book she was getting and whether or not what she was getting would be too heavy for her to carry around as she traveled, Orphan added in an interview with CNN. Police searched the hotel to the extent that they legally could. They searched Lam's room and had dogs go through the building, including the rooftop, but the dogs weren't unsuccessful in detecting her scent. They also didn't search every room. Sergeant Rudy Lopez had said after, "We could only do that if we had probable cause to believe crime had been committed." Ideally, you know, in my personal opinion, I don't think, you know, a crime was committed, and I, even at that point, I don't think I would have recognized it as a crime. People go missing. You know, in this case, maybe some people would think, oh, she's not contacting anyone because she wants to surprise people when she gets back home. It's hard to say. It really is. On February 6th, a week after Lam had last been seen, the LAPD decided more help was needed. Flyers were put up with her image in the neighborhood and also online. It brought the case to the public's attention through the media. Now, once again, let's go back to the elevator video. If you haven't seen it, it is really creepy. It may give you nightmares. Like I said, it also fueled the whole other side of, you know, the logical side of paranormal and all of that. But let's just talk about it. We're not going to go play it because I don't think there's any sound, if I remember correctly, but I will do my best to describe what I can do. The video is technically 2.5 minutes of when Lam was alone. She makes unusual moves and gestures, even leaving the elevator at one point while its doors remain open, even after she appears to have pressed every button. When the doors fail to close after she returns, she leaves the doors closed later. People once again have been analyzing and discussing this since the video was released about her strange behavior, including a Chinese video sharing site called Youku, where it got 3 million videos and 40,000 comments in the first 10 days. Once again, if you ever have seen it or haven't seen it, it is unsettling to watch. You know, you don't know what's going on. You don't know what she sees outside the elevator. You don't know what's going on with her. You know, you don't know any of that. But several theories evolved to explain her actions. One was that Lam was trying to get the elevator car to move in order to escape from someone who was pursuing her. Others suggested that she might be under the influence of ecstasy or other party drugs or drug, but none was detected in her body. Like I said, we'll get into that. If I remember correctly, her death was actual drowning, accidental, I should say. But like I said, we'll get into it. But it also talks about when her bipolar disorder became known, the theory that she was having a psychotic episode also emerged, which is very, very possible. If we take out the drugs and we get the theory of someone pursuing her, whenever you are having a bipolar episode, you aren't exactly in reality. You become paranoid. You feel all these certain things that most people, I guess, can't feel or even realize or anything like that. And in these psychotic episodes when bipolar, you're just all over the place. Other viewers argued that the video had been tampered with before being made public. Besides the obscuring of the timestamp, they claimed parts had been slowed down and nearly a minute of footage had been removed. This could have been done to protect the identity of someone who otherwise would be in the video, either related or not to the disappearance. And you know, if this is true, then I guess whether or not there was somebody in the video, in my personal opinion, they should have released that part too. You just never know, because at the same time, it could have been important. Once again, when her body was discovered, it was discovered on February 19th. Santiago Lopez, a hotel maintenance worker, found her body after many and many complaints of guests complaining about the pressure and quality and all that. Some later claimed their water was black and had an unusual taste. She was found in one of 4 1,000 gallon tanks located on the roof, providing water to guest rooms, a kitchen, and a coffee shop. Though the open hatch, he saw Lam Fang lying face up in the water. The tank was drained and cut open, since his maintenance hatch was too small to accommodate equipment needed to remove Lam's body. According to the coroner's office, they issued an accidental drowning with, once again, a bipolar disorder as a significant factor. The full coroner's report released in June stated that Lam's body had been found naked, clothing similar to what she was wearing in the elevator was floating in the water, coated with a sand-like particulate. Her watch and room key were also found with her. Lam's body was moderately decomposed and bloated. It was mostly greenish, with some marbling evident of the abdomen and skin separation evident, and there was no sign of trauma, physically or sexual assault or suicide. When toxicology tests got back, they showed traces consistent with prescription medication that were found among her belongings, plus nondescript drugs such as Cenotab and ibuprofen. A very small quantity of alcohol was present, but no other recreational drugs. Investigators and experts, however, have noted that the concentration of her prescription drugs in her system indicated that she was under medicating or had stopped taking medications recently. And that's really, really big thing. If you know anybody, including yourself, that has stopped taking your medicine, you fall into the same pattern. Whenever I stopped taking my depression medicine a while ago, like years and years ago, whenever I was still a teenager, I fell into, you know, me being suicidal, even writing notes about being suicidal. You know, since I have been off of my medicine again, it hasn't happened, but it can happen to anyone, is what I'm saying. When you are off your meds after taking them for so long, at a consistent period of rate, you fall back into the same place for the most part. You know, there are the cases where you don't, but it's very rare. The investigation had determined how Lam died, but did not initially offer an explanation on how she got into the tank in the first place. Doors and stairs that access the hotel's roof are locked, with only staff having the passcode keys as well, and all the other reports and stuff. And any attempt to force them would supposedly have triggered alarm. The hotel's fire escape could have been allowed to help her bypass the security measures. Her scent trail was lost near a window that connected to it. A video posted to the internet by a Chinese user after Lam's death showed that the hotel's roof was easily accessible via the fire escape and that two of the lids of the water tanks were open. Apart from the question of how she got onto the roof, others asked if she could have gotten into the tank by herself. All four tanks were 4x8 cylinders propped up on concrete blocks. There were no fixed access to them, and hotel workers had to use a ladder to look at the water. They were protected by heavy lids that would be difficult to replace from within. The hotel employee who found the body said that the lid was open at the time, removing the issue of how she could have closed the lid from the inside. Police dogs searched through the hotel, even on the roof, shortly after her disappearance was noted, but did not find any trace of her. Let's see. We are not going to talk about the elevator video or anything like that. We're going to go into, I think, the autopsy report. I'm going to point out that, you know, according to this, it looks like that there is questions that are still being raised due to incomplete information. For instance, if we do run into this, it does not say what the results of the rape kit and the fingernail kit were, or even if they were processed. Plus, it also shows subcutaneous pooling of blood in Lam's anal area, which does, according to some of observers, suggest a sign of sexual abuse. Also, though, one pathologist has noted about that it could have been resulting from bloating in the course of the decomposition of the body, and her rectum was also prolapsed. Even the coroner's pathologist appeared to be ambivalent about the conclusion that Lam's death was accidental. So let's see. Her phone was not found either with her body or in the hotel room, assumed to have been stolen. Let's see. Yeah, and it looks like her blog post was updated after her death. But let's go into the autopsy report. We got 35-ish minutes left of this. Once again, this happened in LA. We're not going to go into all that. The cause of death, whether or not you want to believe in it, is drowning. But it could have had led from the bipolar disorder, you know, and all of that. She was 21 years old at the time. There was moderate decomposition, no trauma, history of bipolar, and then we'll get to the toxicology and microscopic reports. According to the external examination, the body is at the time identified by toe tags and is that of an unembalmed refrigerated adult female Asian, once again, moderate decomposition. At the time, she was 121 pounds, 66 inches, and is thin. The skin shows a 1-inch scar on the right knee and a 1/4 round abrasion on the left knee. There was no scars on the wrist, no tattoos. The rigor has been polished. I'm going to lift it up really fast so people know what a rigor is. Let's see. A rigor mortis is a postmortem change resulting in the stiffening of the body muscles due to the chemical changes in the myofibrils. So pretty much it had been abolished. The rigor mortis helps in estimating the time since death. Let's see, let's go a little bit farther with this. So what it means when it is abolished, so it's just, I'm not going to go into this, but pretty much it's opposite of absent or roughly absent. I'm not a coronologist or a coroner or anything like that. But let's move forward. The liver mortis is not appreciated. We can get more into that later if we want. The head is normal cephalic and covered by brown hair. There is no balding and the hair can be described as straight. The examination of the eyes reveals irides that appear to be brown in color and sclerae that are white. There are no pedicle hemorrhages of the conjunctive of the lids, and the orosinal passages or passages are unobstructed, meaning that, you know, it's the nose, it's what you breathe through. Upper and lower teeth are present. Dentures are also absent. The neck is unremarkable. There's no deformity in the chest. Pretty much this just saying that there's nothing really wrong with her. But once again, the anus is edematous, and I know I said that wrong, and shows pooling of blood in the subcutaneous tissues surrounding the orifice. Like I said though, it could be a result of the bloating and the decomposition. When we talk about the decomposition, once again, there's screening of the body, sparing the lower legs and feet. There is marbling seen on the upper thighs. The scalp, skin, and hair easily soils with slight pulling. I think what that means is just a little pullback, but let's just double check really fast. Let's see. Let's go to medical terms. So the slow is necrotic tissue that needs to be removed from the wound for healing to take place. When referring to SLOW, some terms may be used interchangeably, and fibrotic tissue or necrotic tissue most commonly. Let's go back to the autopsy now. Like I said, you know, this is kind of a lot, and there's more than, I think, 10 pages of this. And I'm a little bit all over, not trying to be. But anyhow, let's get back to this. The head and the face is bloated with bulging eyes. The face shows skin slippage on the forehead and the right cheek that is dry and brown in color. Skin slippage is present on the chest, back, arms, and left lower leg. The skin shows as well, marked wrinkling of the palms, fingers, soles of the feet, and toes. The internal soft tissues and organs show emphysematous, I know I said that wrong, change, and autolysis. Once again, there is no evidence of any previous recent hospitalization. There has not been postmortem intervention for organ procurement. The clothing was found. Once again, the body was not clothed. The coroner inspected the clothing, what it consisted of, and everything. Let's see. The body cavities. Talking about the initial incision, the body cavities are entered through the standard coronal incision and the standard Y-shaped incision. No foreign material is present in the mouth, upper airway, and trachea or something like that. However that's pronounced, I forgot. Let's see. No hemorrhages, really. Anywhere. The neck looks good. I'm just skimming right now because I'm not going to read everything looks good in detail. I'm just telling you, according to this, everything is looking good on the neck. When we're talking about the chest and abdominal cavity, both pleural cavities contain dark brown fluid. 300 cc on the right and 200 cc on the left. The lungs are voluminous soft tissues of the thoracic and abdominal walls have light postmortem softening, discoloration, and crepitation. Talks about the fat. The breasts are examined in section usual matter with no abnormalities. Organs are also good. The fluid, there's no fluid collection, I meant, as well. Let's see, looks like that's all good. Everything looks good. It pretty much says everything looks good. Obviously, there's going to be some stuff that's found inside the body, whether it's from, decomposition and whatnot. Let's see. Just skimming through this. Everything looks good, it says so. Let's see. Let's talk about the urinary system, where it talks about the corticomandibular demarcation is obscured by congestion. Let's look what that means, just to make this episode a little bit longer and more interesting. Let's see. So it just says, let's look really fast. Let's click on an article. So this article was published on PubMed.gov, and it says what causes diminished corticomandibular differentiation and renal insufficiency. The purpose of the abstraction is to investigate whether loss of it is due to renal and whatnot. Let's see. Is it actually going to explain? I don't think it's going to. No, we don't got much time. But yeah, it doesn't really say much. So let's just move forward with that. The genital system, once again, you know, definitely around the anal area. It's the, you know, blood. The vagina cervix has a normal appearance for age and show postmortem discoloration. Let's see. The vaginal wall does not show evidence. Like I said, some people were saying sexual assault. Let's see. The spleen looks normal. Everything pretty much looks normal. No hemorrhages. Other brain. Let's note this, so the spinal cord was not dissected in entirety, which I don't know if that's what they normally do or if that's just half-assed job. And what I mean by that is maybe 95%, 85% looks good. Maybe they just like, it looks good. We're not going to dissect it anymore. Or, I don't know how that works, in short. But like I said, the toxicology says the bile, heart, blood, liver, tissue, stomach, contents, spleen, and brain have been submitted. We are going to go into, let's go. A little bit more, but as an opinion of the autopsy report, our Lum died as a result of drowning. No trauma, and the toxicology studies did not show acute drug or alcohol intoxication. She is had a history of bipolar. Once again, took prescribed medication, which the toxicology does show. But however, the quantitation in the blood was not performed due to limited sample availability, and I think that was what people were talking about with this, is you know, the lack of medication showing in her system, which could possibly once again mean she wasn't taking it consistently like she was supposed to, or she just stopped prior to her death, like a few days prior or so. Let's see. Let's try to find some other stuff. Let's go into, let's see here. It does say that there were, like, rape kits and sexual assault kits and all of that done. Well, when I mean done, sent in. Whether or not I can find it in here. I don't think I can find any here though. Let's just look really fast though. But let's keep in mind this gaps on her knees and the abrasion on her other knee. You know, she had the 1-inch scab and the 1/4 abrasion. So let's keep it in mind. You know, it is possible that she was just having a bipolar episode, whether or not those scrapes and aberrations occurred from it. It is unclear. Let's double check. It talks about, I guess some of the medication like Advil to Dexedrine. I'm reading this sideways, by the way. And, you know, the Zenotab as well. It talks about the description, like pill cutter, which I don't know if any of these jokes were too big for her to take. And I'm not her, you know, because some of these could be. But she had pill cutter, two pill cases, one divided pill case, 5 prescription receipts and personal medication history were placed in the case file. You know, like I said, and the reason that I wanted to throw that pill cutter out there and say maybe it was too big for her to swallow or whatnot is because drug users, when they are abusing meds, definitely pills, they do have a pill cutter of sort or a pill crusher that they use. It continues talking about all these other drugs that was prescribed to her, looks like. Let's see, there was one which looks like, or there was two at least, that was not prescribed to her. Maybe 3, which was Dexedrine, 10 milligrams, and it was loose pills. And the other one was Advil. Let's see here. The other ones looks like they were prescribed except for the Advil and the Dexedrine. And then the others looked like they were prescribed. And then it goes back to all of that. She had no other drugs. Like I said, the only other alcohol was like 0.02%. But she didn't have any marijuana in her system. Let's see. She had, once again, her medications barely present. Yeah. So that's the end of the autopsy report. I know that we didn't really do much. We did talk a lot. I should say I did. But when an autopsy report looks like this, I'm just going to skim over it, see if there's anything important. Like I said, there's no forced trauma, no signs of trauma or sexual abuse. It doesn't say that the rape kits are completed or done, but I don't know if autopsy reports say that necessarily. It does say though that these type of kits were sent in. She wasn't doing anything harmful to her, so it could have been, you know, like I said, take out the stalker, take out, you know, all the other stuff. When we talk about bipolar disorder psychotic episode, we encounter things like these. Things that can be harmful. Things can happen during a psychotic episode. And if she wasn't running from someone, was a suicide attempt, if it wasn't bipolar. Like I said, the one thing that does stand out that they did find on her body was the knee scrape and the knee aberration. Why that continues standing out with me is the most obvious. It's because, how did she get them? Was it prior to her death, meaning that it wasn't even at the hotel? Or was it just because she fell as she was running or something? it wasn't clear in the autopsy, and I don't think autopsies are that clear on how she could have gotten scrapes, and apparitions like that, unless somebody knew of them. But without further ado, like I said, this episode wasn't much without autopsy because there was no signs of anything besides, drowning and decomposition. But if you like this episode, thank you. But we are going to actually release the next episode, not overnight. I was hoping to, but if you haven't been telling, I've been yawning, so I'm not going to do it tonight. It will be sometime today, before I have to go to work. So, without further ado, have a great night, great day, whatever. I see you guys next time on After Dark, Coast to Coast.